the Initial Reaction Podcast, back with you for a special edition of the podcast today. I am flying solo. My name is J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers. J.P. Cadoran is out on the course somewhere, most likely at Erin Hills in the town of Erin, outside of Hartford, of course. That is where the U.S. Open, the USGA Men's Golf Championship, will be held there this week for the first time in Wisconsin history, the U.S. Open on Wisconsin soil. Very exciting week. And to celebrate that, I got a very special guest to talk about it. Many of you know the name Jordan Niebuhrge. He is a Homestead High School graduate, went and played college golf at Oklahoma State, and he will be in the U.S. Open. He qualified a couple weeks ago in Tacoma, Washington, through the sectional qualifying process. I think he took second in Tacoma, so he is going to be appearing in the field. It will be his first U.S. Open, and got a chance to sit down and talk with him for a little bit. Many of you may remember him from the British Open a couple years ago. He took sixth in the British Open. That was the low amateur. I think he tied for sixth, but definitely made a run, definitely made a name for himself a couple years ago, and was the low amateur, so he got no money for it, unfortunately, but I talked about that a little bit with him, and he talks about sort of the fallout from that and how that impacted his career and what he's looking forward to at Erin Hills. He will be the first guy to tee off at Erin Hills on Thursday, very first tee time. First swing will belong to the local boy from Homestead High School, and talked about that as well. He has no idea if that was somehow preordained or sketched out in some way by the USGA or if it was just crazy random luck of the draw. But that is certainly an interesting tidbit to note as well, as Wisconsin prepares to host this thing. And many of you probably paid attention Sunday when golfer Kelvin Na was talking about the fescue grass at Erin Hills and posted something on Instagram that showed just how difficult it is to find your golf ball if you get into that grass. And I think that's probably the feature of the course that we will be talking about throughout the week and beyond. I think it sort of seems like that's the thing that's going to set this course apart for better or worse. It surely could go either way. Be very curious to see how other golfers react to that hazard, to that circumstance. But definitely don't want to hit into the rough at Erin Hills. Sounds like if you stay in the fairway, you're going to be in really good shape on this course. But the fescue grass, the tall, wavy grass, is going to eat up some golf balls and make it a little difficult for the pros to find their wayward shots. So here, give a listen to what Jordan Niebuhrge had to say about his opportunity here. You can also check out my story about him and what he's been doing on the Mackenzie Tour in Canada on mynorthwestnow.com. You can navigate there from mycommunitynow.com. Sort of put this podcast into print form, and you can check out some of his thoughts that way. And stay tuned afterwards. I got another special guest, Greg Gomulski, athletic director of Catholic Memorial High School. He'll be really heading into his final weeks as AD, one of several top ADs who are retiring this year. So stick around for that after this with this interview with Jordan Niebuhrge. My guest is Jordan Niebuhrge. You may know him from Homestead High School or Oklahoma State if you're a college golf fan, or maybe you saw him perform at the British Open. He is officially a multi-major golfer now. You're going to be in the U.S. Open starting on Thursday at Erin Hills in Wisconsin. Just how big of a deal is it for you to be golfing in Wisconsin? I mean, I guess a major tournament, you know, is a major tournament, but the fact that this one is kind of in your backyard, how big of a deal is that for you?
Yeah, this will be my fourth major appearance, which is pretty cool to say. Just being one year as of kind of this past Monday from turning pro. So it's pretty cool to say that. And, you know, it's been a lot of ups and downs this past year, but I've learned a lot and kind of in a solid place right now up in the Mackenzie Tour. And I've been playing well and just really excited to obviously get through the locals and the sectionals to get to the Open, especially with it being in Wisconsin this year. I think ever since it was announced probably 4 or 5 years ago, I kind of had it on the list of goals that I wanted to achieve and thought it'd be pretty cool to be able to play in an Open, and with it being the first one I've gotten to, it just makes it that more special.
little bit of buzz Sunday came about when a golfer pointed out that the fescue grass at Erin Hills is pretty difficult to play out of. I don't know how familiar you are with Erin Hills. I imagine you've at least seen the course before, and you'll certainly have some time to play it going into the tournament. But just what do you know about Erin Hills, and is that fescue grass that you know of, is that going to be a big challenge?
Yeah, I've played it probably 10 to 15 times. I've played it in high school, in a couple high school tournaments. I played it in a college event, and I played it in amateur, the U.S. public qualifier. So I've gotten to play it, and especially in tournament golf, which is pretty cool. And, you know, it's definitely a tough track. If you're driving the ball well, you can really take advantage of some of the holes, and you know, there's a lot of, as you said, there's a lot of trouble out there with the fescue, and not only does it come into play off the fairway, but it also comes into play on the, around the, some of the greens. So definitely have to be wary of kind of where it's at. But you know, if you go out there and play solid golf, the fairways are generous enough. And they have pretty big greens. So if you're hitting it well, you can get it around the place. And obviously it's a long golf course, but I think that's going to suit me well, which is good. And I'm just kind of excited to go out there. I'm flying back from Canada right now, and I'm going to be able to see it for the first time in a year or so since I played it last, and just really excited to see it again.
Yeah, you mentioned the tour that you're on now. For people who don't know a lot about that tour, how would you compare it? How does it, I guess competition-wise, how does it compare to some of the other golf tours that are out there? And I don't even know how you did this weekend in Canada. I'm guessing pretty well. Certainly you made the cut.
Yeah, I made the cut, finished 30th or something like that. I played pretty average, but, okay. You know, it's a pretty cool deal, the PGA. It's kind of a PGA affiliate, so it goes PGA Tour, and then web.com, which is below that, and then they have the Latin America and the Mackenzie Tour, which is right below the web.com. So they kind of have the stepping stone built for you, the PGA Tour, that is, has the stepping stone built for you to make your way up. And if all goes well, if you play well, you'll end up getting to the PGA Tour in 2 years if you kind of, if you play well on the Mackenzie Tour and the web.com. So
I think I saw that your tee time is right away out of the gate. I think you're the first tee time. I don't know if that's changed or not. How do you feel about that? Is that something that is an advantage for somebody like you, a detriment? I guess, how do you look at a start time where you get to take first swing?
I don't think it really matters that much.
Okay.
I'm 6:45, so I mean, obviously that's pretty early. I don't think I've ever teed off in an event that early before, but I've had several 7 o'clock tee times, and you're going to get that if you're a golfer. So it's not that big of a deal as far as time goes, but I think I'm first off, so I'm 6:45, and I'm first on tee, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to be leading the tournament off.
That's not the type of thing that is scripted out, like, the local boy takes first swing or anything like that, is it? That just is just luck.
I have no clue. I mean, I guess the USGA sets all the pairings and tee times, so, and I'm playing with two other OSU guys.
Oh, that's cool.
So I don't know if that was scripted out or what, but it'll be pretty special Thursday, Friday.
That's amazing. So a lot of people know that you were the top amateur finisher at the British Open before you turned pro. How did your career shift after that event, if at all? Because given that you were an amateur, I guess it maybe didn't, you know, it didn't have the impact. Maybe it could have. I don't know. But how did things change after that performance?
I know I didn't get any of the money. But,
yeah, it didn't help your wallet at all.
No. I actually had to pay more because it was a Monday finish, and we had to pay right around $1,000 more to change flights and everything, but it was an awesome experience. We got we were there for a lot of the summer. We went over with Charlie Danielson and my dad, and we played the British Am, the English Am, and then we played the qualify for the Open, and I ended up getting in. So came back to Mequon for a week, then headed back over for another 12 days. So we were over there for 45 days that summer, and it was just an awesome experience. Obviously, I played awesome, and really just didn't make too many mistakes out there, and kind of kept myself in it all the way up to the end. It opened a lot of doors for me. Maybe not right away, but this past year when I turned pro right after school, I got six exemptions, and I got back into the Open the next year, this past summer. So I got 7 events to play in, and it was pretty special to be able to get them. I didn't play that well all summer, but it was pretty cool to be able to get that opportunity to play in all those events.
Awesome. So is this a pretty linear progression? You're in the McKenzie. Is the next step then to make the web.com after a certain number of finishes and then PGA? Like, I guess, how would it ideally map out for you?
Yeah, that's just kind of how it works. Top 5 on the money list here for this year, this summer, they have like 12 events on the McKenzie Tour. So if you finish top 5 on the money list, you get your full web card for next year.
Okay.
And then if you finish 6 through 10 or something like that, you get exempt in the second stage of Q school. And so there's definitely some benefits to being on the tour. So if you finish top 5, you get into web next year, and then you play the whole year in web. And if you finish top 25 out there, or top 25 in the playoffs on the web, then you'll get your PGA Tour card. So it's kind of a three-year process, but there's definitely some loopholes if you're playing well and you can get through to the web a little quicker, and there's definitely some loopholes you can do there. But as of right now, that's just the main focus, is just playing well up here this summer and getting the opportunity to play on web next year.
And as far as the U.S. Open qualifying, I'm trying to remember. I think you were in Memphis for the qualifier. Is that right?
I was in Tacoma.
You were in
Washington.
Tacoma. Okay. I think Steve Stricker was in Memphis. But so that process is interesting. I don't even know if people realize how that works, that really you just have to perform well at, you know, a couple golf tournaments back to back, and you can get into the U.S. Open no matter your background. Is it nerve-wracking that it comes down to just a few rounds of golf, or is that – you know, appealing because you don't have to hit any certain standards. You just have to play well in a couple tournaments in a row, and you're going to be in the U.S. Open.
It's definitely tough. It's a long day. I mean, 36 holes in one day is always pretty long. So you're out there 10 to 12 hours of work. And it's definitely high level pressure work. And so you got to be playing well, got to handle your emotions your correct way. And, there's always, if you look at the Memphis and Columbus qualifiers, it looks like a tour event, and they only get seven or eight spots to get through. So it's always tough, but, if you play well, you play solid, you handle your emotions in the right way, you can have a great opportunity to kind of get through sectionals and be able to play in the Open.
All right, Jordan. Well, we are so excited to see you play. I'm sure you're pretty pumped up to get back home and and enjoy it, man. We're looking forward to it.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it. Really cool that I got to talk to him mere days before he tees it up at the U.S. Open. I was very excited to chat with him. Again, J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers flying solo this week on the Initial Reaction podcast. We'll now turn to another interview with Greg Gomulski, the Catholic Memorial High School Athletic Director. You may know him by name, you may not, but Catholic Memorial is, without question, one of the most successful athletics programs in the state of Wisconsin. They're going to be competing for a 6th consecutive girls soccer state championship this weekend at Eline Soccer Park in Milwaukee. They are the favorite to do so in Division III. That's crazy. They won their 5th straight last year. That was already unprecedented in any division, and they are, without question, the foremost girls soccer program in the state of Wisconsin. They have a lot of programs that have similar success. The girls' volleyball team has won 3 straight state championships and are making a habit of winning them in the past decade. And I mean, under Ted Schulte, they've got a great thing going. The boys' volleyball team just won a state championship, beat Marquette in a 5-set thriller. The football team is a state champion after finishing runner-up last year under Hall of Fame coach Bill Young. They've got a great thing going. I mean, Catholic Memorial across the board. And I'm not even mentioning a ton of sports where they have plenty of success. The baseball team had a great year, didn't end up going to state, but still had a very good year in the spring baseball season. There's just so much success at CMH, and they are routinely what you could say is the best D2 program across the board in the state of Wisconsin. And Greg Amulski has a lot to do with it. He's been there for close to 4 decades in his current position. He and several other top athletic directors stepping down this year. I say several, but there are 2 others that really come to mind. Scott Coogie at Muskego, Mike Novak at Brown Deer. You may know them from a couple different places. Scott Coogie was actually head baseball coach at UWM when they made the transition to Division I. So he has some interesting background. He's been at Muskego for a long time. Mike Novak, he was a great basketball coach, boys basketball coach at Brown Deer High School. His son, Steve Novak, was a part of a state qualifying team in the early 2000s. Steve Novak, of course, went on to have a great career at Marquette and subsequently in the NBA. They built a massive field house at Brown Deer High School that is one of the gems of the area, if not the best at this point, field house at any high school in Wisconsin. So those guys are all retiring, all 3. I did a roundtable with the 3 of them about the state of the AD role and sort of the shape of athletics as it stands right now in high school. So you can find that at my Preps Alcove column at lakecountrynow.com. I've done stories on all 3 of them. You can find their stories at the My Community Now website that is appropriate, waukeshanow.com for Gamalski, and the North Shore site for Mike Novak, and the Southwest site for Scott Coogie. So check all of those out if you get a chance. But here in full is my interview with Greg Gamalski of Catholic Memorial. This interview was recorded at the beginning of May, so some of the references are a little bit dated, but the information pretty much all still relevant today. So here is Greg. My guest is Greg Gamalski, athletic director at Catholic Memorial High School, one of the premier athletics programs in the state of Wisconsin. He has been at the school in some capacity for 43 years, and this will be his last one. So, Greg, I don't know if that's sunk in yet. You still got a little bit, well, actually a lot more spring to go, given the number of events we have to cram into May. But has it sunk in that this is actually going to be your last go-around at CMH?
It most certainly is going to be my last go-around. I did tell our administrative staff that I would be retiring earlier in the year, so they had time to, you know, set up the process to hire a new athletic director, and that's all been taken care of. So I have no choice. The door is closing on me, so I can't turn around and say, "Hey, guess what? I changed my mind."
Right.
But I'm not going to change my mind. I'm looking forward to, you know, it's time for, you know, a younger person to, you know, take the reins and, you know, just use their energy and I'm sure they'll make this place as good or if not better than when I left it.
They'll have a pretty high bar to reach. I mean, Catholic Memorial, especially lately, has been piling up state championships. And I guess if you're talking about middle-level enrollments, it's kind of, I think it's the premier athletics program in the state of Wisconsin. I'm sure there are a lot of things, and I think I know some of the things you're going to say, but if you could pinpoint what it is about that building, about the staff that enables CMH to do what they do year in, year out. I mean, you've got empires in soccer and football and many other sports. I mean, what has allowed CMH to build that athletics culture?
You know, I truly believe it is the – I think it starts with having a good, solid foundation with your coaches. And we have had, in those areas where we've been extremely successful, we've had coaches here for, 20-plus years.
Right.
For example, you had mentioned, girls soccer, boys soccer, our boys and girls volleyball programs, obviously football. Now we're adding a number of new programs, with lacrosse, and we've added rugby, and we actually have a Scholastic Lays trap shooting team that I'm sort of proud of because that was a new start too, and those kids are enjoying themselves and having fun.
Fencing too, right?
It's the foundation, the solid foundation, really. I think starts with having truly, and I've been fortunate and lucky and blessed to have coaches that have been here for those 20-plus years and have built great reputations within and for their program. So I think that really is the base. And then you have the kids that you know are coming to Catholic Memorial for good Catholic education. They buy into these guys. You know, they believe what these guys, you know, stand for in each, you know, their sports specific areas. And once you get kids buying in, mom and dad buy in, and things go pretty smooth, you know, for the most part. And I've been fortunate to have that good solid nucleus base of coaches that have stayed here at Catholic Memorial for a good period of time.
I feel bad I didn't mention the volleyballs right off the top, since they both reigning state champs along with everybody else.
You know, I hate to say this. It's funny because when I'm caught off guard, like I've been caught off guard a couple of times, but you know, and I'm trying to remember, okay, we have all these programs, we have state championships, even though they're not WIAA. You know, it's like,
right.
I got to try to remember
them.
And wouldn't you know it, one time I was being interviewed, it was channel, I think 1824, they were here for a basketball game, mm-hmm. and I forgot one of our programs. Oh. And wouldn't you know it, the next morning, I got a couple emails.
And, yes.
Blah, blah, blah. But guess what? You forgot that. And I'm going like,
Yep. Yeah.
So,
well.
Yeah. You got to be careful.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys had to build an entire wing dedicated to trophies because you have a habit of racking them up over the course of a year. We talked a little bit about this before I started recording, but the job of the athletic director has, it seems at least, intensified. And I know you've coached before. You said you were an assistant in track, football, and tried baseball for a little while. Primarily, you've been an athletic director in your time there. I think even in the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen athletic directors really give up the coaching side of it and stick to the administrative side of it. Is there, I guess, do you sense that trend as well? Do you think are there one or two reasons that you can really pinpoint? Is it just more paperwork now? Is it, you know, what are the things that make it so that this really has to be a standalone position?
You know what? I not that I'm going to blame technology, but I think technology has a lot to do with the amount of work I think athletic directors have on their plate now. Email, you know, I mean, people can get a hold of you instantly now.
Yeah.
It's not like leave a message, can you get back to me? You know, so you're constantly, I leave the school. Our IT guy, Kevin Heaney, told me, he said, Greg, you receive the most emails than anybody else in this building.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm going like, God, I believe it, you know, especially with the program that you're using for scheduling and umpires and officials, et cetera, et cetera. It's just like nonstop. And I get home at night and all of a sudden I'm going, oh geez, I got six emails, and you know, three of them you have to respond to. And so it's just the technology I think has added to I don't want to call it stress, but I think adding more to the job than it used to be.
Yeah, of course.
And plus, you know, you're trying to develop programs. Like, you take a look at all colleges and universities. They don't run freshman and JV programs in any of their sports. It's varsity only. You know,
right.
So it you know, when you're developing programs and just sports in general, you know, you want to develop your freshmen, your sophomores, and then into your juniors and seniors at the varsity level. So you're actually looking at three teams within a program where, you know, colleges and major universities, they don't have that. They don't
right.
have to worry about that.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
so,
true.
You know, and there's, you know, tryout processes and like you mentioned earlier, there's more paperwork because you want to make sure you have things documented, you know, as best you can. I think some of the mandates that have come down from the state legislature to the WIAA, you know, having certain coaching requirements. Now we have to have the first aid, AED, CPR thing, you know, which is good. I mean, I'm not bashing it in any way, shape, or form, but that's just another thing that you have to organize and make sure that your coaches, are adhering to.
Right. I feel I was in high school right in the year 2000s when I graduated. So for me, the WIAA and the WISA merger, it really does feel like a before and after in my mind. I don't know how when you guys went through that, did that change the athletics culture at all? I guess how did it look like in the WISA days versus what has been in the last 17 years?
You know, I'll tell you what, I'm first of all, I'll go on record saying it was the best thing I think that happened for high school athletics, was to merge the two, because there had been a question throughout the history of the two associations as to, especially when it came to state championships, et cetera, who mm-hmm. is the best, why do we have two separate associations, two separate state championships in the same sport? I think that was healthy for high school athletics in general, and I think the WIAA, in my opinion, has done a tremendous job of handling handling that merger and accepting the fact that private schools were going to be a part of the high school athletic scene from that point back in, what was it, 2000?
Yeah, 2001.
Probably forever. I don't see that ever changing in the near future. So that's been healthy. I also think that I think high school athletics with that merger raised the bar. I mean, being a part of the Classic Eight Conference, for example, with Catholic Memorial, and originally it was Pius, the public schools, when we were in competition with one another, they went like, whoa, geez, this is what volleyball is all about.
Right.
the first couple of years we were coaching in the Classic Eight with football, and we went up against Arrowhead and beat them, and it was like, they went like, whoa, this is what it's all about, and then vice versa, they were good in a number of different, debating the public schools were good in another different areas. And then, so we sort of raised the bar on each other. It's good for the athletes. I wouldn't want it any other way. I think if you're an athlete, you want to compete, and you want to compete against the best, possible competition out there. So I think that has happened over the last 18 years within the WIAA and within the conferences that were formed with the realignment and the merger.
So with the raising of the bar and the emails you talked about, you're talking about kids that are playing a lot of select sports at a younger age, and as you get families who invest so much in that, you get families who are perhaps more invested when they get to the high school level. And as a journalist, one thing we see is the parent involvement as a potential sort of barrier to coaches and to athletic directors. Just in a general sense, not even a Catholic Memorial sense, but in a general sense, are you worried about the direction that sort of, I don't know what to call it, parent over-eagerness has taken? Has it plateaued to a degree? Is it still becoming an issue that's increasingly problematic? Or do you feel like athletic directors, for the most part, have been able to find that sort of a common ground with the majority of the parents at their school?
I think all the athletic directors work hard to have that common ground with their relationship with, the parents, the coaches, and the kids. And I think what we're really talking about is specialization in sports.
Yeah, yeah.
And, obviously the athletic directors, I think, across the state are definitely proponents of multi-sport athletes. And it's funny, I think in a medium to smaller school, you probably see more multi-sport kids. I think as the population and enrollment Division I schools, you probably see a little bit more specialization today than you ever did before, where kids are, they're taking a look at, well, let's see, our enrollment's 2,000, and, there's only 15 or 12 kids that make the varsity basketball. I used to love basketball, but I'm not that good. And now I'm a pretty good boys volleyball player. I think I'm just going to go out for the club thing and do, the volleyball in the fall for the boys, and then the club thing later on through the summer, and then they end up specializing. I think we're seeing a little bit in the soccer area too. We saw it first, I think, with girls, and now we're starting to see it both with girls and guys. And I think it's more so in the higher enrollment schools, where kids sort of see the handwriting on the wall. If you don't play basketball year round, you might not make the team because you're not going to be as good as the other kids that are, the other 11 kids that are. They have a basketball in their hand,
right.
365. So that year at Memorial, it's a little bit different. We do have some specialization of kids, doing the soccer, the volleyball, et cetera. But the kids, I think, are realizing, I want to have fun in high school, and I want to do as many things as I can with my buddies and my friends, because 4 years goes by so fast. And we sort of get kids believing in, hey, you don't want to regret this. Do as much as you can, and enjoy it. And we've been fortunate to, you know, to have, I think, that mentality with our kids.
Yeah, so just then from apart from the specialization, just having parents being able to reach out to you and get to you more easily than they ever have before. And there's also the social media element that I'm sure you and coaches have to police a little bit.
I stay away from that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I don't do what is it, Facebook or YouTube or any of that. That scares me.
Yeah.
You know, because I hear, you know, you hear horror stories out there with that social media and kids getting involved in that. And it's funny you mention that because I wasn't even thinking of social media because I don't do it.
Yeah.
But that has really, I don't want to say changed the landscape, but it has made it the landscape interesting in high school athletics.
Yeah.
No question. I mean, look at when you watched the news last night. Or the last week and a half or whatever with the airline industry and people, you know, filming the altercations
right
between the stewardess or, you know, and the passengers. And it's like, how is this all happening?
I know.
It's crazy. And now, you know, you see it with, you know, kids at, you know, at venues or parties or whatever. And it's just the yikes.
Yeah,
it definitely has made things interesting in athletic directors' lives.
So I probably could put together a top three CMH moments from the fall sports season alone, but if there is a way to somehow encapsulate your career at CMH...
You know what? It's funny when you mention that. Because I'm thinking back 43 years, I mean, my mind is mush, you know, because I'm getting older anyway. But a couple of things that I really... sorry about that. I enjoyed watching all three of my daughters went to Catholic Memorial. So I was fortunate enough to be able to see, all three of them play, you know, volleyball and basketball and do the things that interested them here at Catholic Memorial. So, that's one of them.
Yeah.
I think, just enjoying, what I'm doing, here for 43 years, obviously people don't stay in jobs that long anymore.
Right.
But my wife was patient enough, and I do have to thank her because she was patient enough and supported me throughout the 43 years here. I mean, the time commitment is huge, and she's always been there supporting me in everything I've done here. I would also say being, while I was able to coach and do the athletic director thing, being a part of the state championships in football when I was coaching was definitely one of the highlights in my 43-year career. You know, I mean, ADs and coaches know how difficult it is to win a conference championship, much less a state championship. And I'll never forget the feeling that you have and the feelings that you have for the kids and your fellow coaches when you win a state championship and it's just it's like, you know, the wow moment. It's like, well, all the work and time and effort, et cetera, sort of paid off and this is where we ended up. So yeah, I would say those things are probably there's probably a ton more just being at all the venues that the state championships are at, it is exciting. The Cole Center, Camp Randall, it's just like, it's so cool.
Right.
You know, so, I don't regret being a part of any of those great moments.
You got quite the class of ADs retiring this year. You, Scott Coogie at Muskego, and Mike Novak at Brown Deer.
I know.
You guys should do a Mount Rushmore of the class of 2017 athletic directors. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's funny because we the athletic directors. I mean, we talk about basically almost every time we meet, we're talking about, hey, when are you going to retire? When are you going to retire? And, I think so much is demanded of athletic directors. Well, in the public school, you're an athletic director / associate principal.
Right.
So a lot of those guys end up on, dealing with some disciplinary things on a daily basis too. So it's not just an athletic director's job anymore. It's you're a multi. The older guys sort of get the time commitment. The younger guys, I don't think they really know what the time commitment's going to be
right
until they're actually the athletic director. And then they go through a couple of years and they go, I'm like, oh my God, I didn't realize I was going to be here, you know, 24/7
every
blah,
night.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, so you see, I think you're starting to see a greater turnover of ADs because, you know, you get younger guys that are thinking, hey, I want to be an administrator. I love athletics. They have a young wife, and all of a sudden they start having a family, and now they have young kids, and they're going,
yep.
like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to see my family again.
I know.
So I think that's one of the reasons why you're sort of, you know, seeing somewhat of a more of a turnover with athletic directors. I think the older guys, like I think Scott looked at, and so did I, you know, you take a look at your retirement package, you go like, hey, you know, it's probably a good time to do this.
Yes, for sure.
You sort of look at, hey, I'm going to take care of myself here and pull the pin on this. And I think that's what Scott did. I don't want to speak for Scott, but I think he was taking a look at, you know, what would be advantageous for him to do at this point in time. And it was, you know, the right thing to do for him.
Right. Thanks for tuning in to the Initial Reaction podcast this week. Hope you enjoyed hearing from a golfer who will be in the U.S. Open and one of the many athletic directors who will be retiring July 1st, moving on after a very successful career. Be sure to give us a listen on iTunes if you don't already. Leave a review if you can. That's a great way to let us know that that you enjoy what typically JP and myself do every week. We don't get a lot of feedback, so we'd love it. Any insight you would like to provide, we will happily apply it. I know we have a small but pretty dedicated listener base on the Initial Reaction podcast, so I'd be interested to know what people have to say about that. Give us a rating and a review. You can also check us out on Stitcher and, of course, at Lake Country Now and MyCommunityNow.com. Enjoy the U.S. Open. Enjoy whatever the summer has to bring you. I don't know when we'll be back, probably in a couple weeks, and we'll wrap up what's left of the spring postseason. But until then, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll find you soon.